This is FNX.
Listen to Shoot the Difference. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX and StadiumScene.tv. I'd say radio football, but there's a little bit of a hiatus here. Mr. Connor is going on holiday or he's putting his feet up, whatever it is, but we're not going to be on radio football until the new season. But fear not, we shall continue doing shows, as many shows as possible. I'm your host, Stel, and I've got four co-hosts with me today, again. Welcoming back Mr. Yanakis J. How are you doing, Yan?
I'm grumpy.
But you went to the Cyprus Wine Festival, the biggest money laundering exercise the world has ever seen, allegedly.
I didn't pay for nothing. I got free tickets, so yeah, I was alright.
Did you get your little goodie bag with your free wine and your Badagiagi newspaper?
No, I didn't, my friend. I just went there to listen to a lovely singer, which I did, and I didn't want to think about football for once.
For those of you who don't know, there's a wine festival that occurs every year in North London, and it's full of Cypriots, and they celebrate nothing really. They just turn up. It's an exhibition. There's people selling stuff and trying to promote their businesses, and it's sponsored by a newspaper. And this newspaper is famous for just the obituaries page, because all the old Greek people look at who's died and then they see whose funeral they can go to.
That's basically what it is.
That's effectively what it is. But and they've got a very, very funny Facebook page where they've got a reporter that goes round, and he's terrible. But let's set about that the better, shall we? Guest number two, Mr. Rodri Giggs. Rod, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, all good, mate. All good. You say that with a sigh. I guess you're not happy tonight either.
it's been a long year. We're only in, what are we in? June?
Yep.
Yeah. And I think it's going to get longer.
It will get worse before it gets better, I guess.
Yeah, correct.
Do you know what? I've had an impact on Rod over the period we've been doing this. You know, this is bad. I might stop, you know. I'm rubbing off Rod.
Yeah,
my negativity.
Your depression is rubbing off on him.
It's just how we ended, and just a mess, and it's just a mess.
So me, Ian, and Rod are like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh. Like, oh, I'm so
where do you start? The manager coming in and giving Bill and Ben new contract. that's number one warning signs. What's he seeing that we're not? Because Phil Jones is, he's a joker.
He's English.
Smalling, I can kind of see, you know, with a better player. We've seen that with Van Dijk, you're a better player than Matip, looks decent. Lovren looks decent. So I could see that with Smalling. But Jones, he's too erratic. He's been there 9 years. The guy's just known for pulling stupid faces. He needs to get out of the club.
He needs to get off the face of the planet. But anyway. Next guest. He's brilliant. Kojo from Three Midfield. Welcome back, young man.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, mate. Long time no see. All of, 72, 48 hours?
Sound like that. That's still very long for me, man. So, you know, me personally, I've missed you, man.
Oh, I miss you too, man. Miss you too. Good weekend apart from the result?
I enjoyed my weekend. That result didn't stress me. If they won the league, I would have been crying on this podcast. But it's the Champions League. They've done it before. So, me personally, I couldn't really care. It's all right.
There you go. He's not a sore loser, ladies and gents, I promise.
No, he is. He's just reflecting. Yeah.
Great stuff. And guest number four is a returning Liverpool fan. He's got every right to gloat, but he's not that kind of Liverpool fan, are you, D?
Nah, not really. Not really.
I am gassed right now, but I'm not really giving it large. It all just hasn't totally sunk in yet, to be honest.
How can it not sink in? It's been 2 days.
Nah, just it's a bit mad, because usually I open up my timeline to, oh, what if Liverpool won? Klopp hasn't won anything and whatnot. And nothing of that's on the timeline. So I'm just like, it's fresh. Usually I come on and people are stressing me. No one's stressing me at the moment. It's a weird feeling.
Mm.
You're probably still shocked that that wonderful game you saw on Saturday. That's probably
the game was terrible, but I knew that it would be because the gap from the final to the end of the Premier League season was too large. Mm. It was too big.
There you go. Well, look, I came on your show the other day. Thank you very much for the invite. It was a fantastic...
It was hilarious. 2 hours isn't enough, mate. It's not enough.
I think we could have gone on forever, to be honest. But we did a preview of the Champions League final. But before that, let's talk again about the Europa League final where Chelsea absolutely walloped Arsenal 4-1. Dee, we spoke on your show about the game and you know how the first half was end-to-end kind of stuff and Arsenal had their opportunities and second half they capitulated. In terms of Chelsea's performance in the second half, was that the most complete second half performance you've seen in a final?
Complete. Maybe most complete would be debatable, but in terms of a clinical edge, you could say that. Once they got that first goal, I was quite impressed with Emerson. He's obviously shown that he's a much better defender than Marcos Alonso, which isn't too hard, to be honest. But... it looked like they toyed with to show it is a game.
I'm losing you, Dan. I'm losing you. You sounded like a robot.
Oh, God. what about now?
Yeah, go on. You were saying that they were toying with them.
Yeah, no, I was saying that it was a game of two halves. Because Arsenal were quite good in the first half, but weren't able to get the goal. But then once Chelsea got the first goal, it was just there was only ever going to be one winner, really. Mm. And I thought Arsenal would have played with more hunger, considering really how much the game meant to them to get them back into the Champions League. But it just showed that there needs to be some changes made to the club. It's just not good enough, man.
That's right. And Kojo, do you think Chelsea were toying with Arsenal a little bit before the game because we saw the fallout between Luiz and Higuain. We saw Sarri walking off throwing his cap. The whole will Kante, will he not be fit? Rudiger obviously not playing. Do you think this was part of Chelsea's ploy to maybe lull Arsenal into a full sense of security?
I don't think so. But at the same time, I think Arsenal kind of saw themselves sort of a dream when they thought they had a vulnerable Chelsea because Arsenal... are a vulnerable club. So, you know, there was a lot of mess. Sarri looked genuinely furious. I think Luiz is just being an absolute terror for him right now. He might not be a fan of Sarri. He's tried it with every one of Sarri's signings, especially with Higuain, as you saw. But the Kante thing, I do believe, was a bit of a ploy. I did not feel like he was not going to miss this game. It's too big a game for Chelsea for him to miss because they got Champions League football, but it guarantees a trophy. But Arsenal, whether it was a ploy or not, whether they genuinely hate each other or not, Arsenal just had no chance in this game. And as Dee said, as soon as they conceded, it was done. And that's just vintage Arsenal. Once they concede one, it's game over. So I'm not surprised.
That's a good point you make there because, Rod, over the years, you've criticise Arsenal for their lack of leadership. You've called them yellow. You've called them other things as well, to be fair. This was, with the greatest respect, vintage Arsenal, wasn't it? Second half, well, first half they played pretty decent. They had a couple of chances. But second half, once Chelsea took the lead, there was only one winner.
Yeah, it was, it was probably disheartening for Arsenal fans to watch because they just went to pieces, and then Chelsea just went from strength to strength. And you know, when you got players like Ozil, you know you've got no chance because if you need to dig in, you need to fight, you need to chase the ball and just fight and just dig in for your team. He's just not the person to be in a team like that. It's just. Yeah, it's not only who's in the worst position either, Arsenal or United, they're both in a mess, but probably United more in a mess. But yeah, Arsenal need a total new back four because it's the whole back four is poor, really.
Well, Rod, you mentioned Ozil. he didn't have the greatest games. I know he was taken off and he muttered a few things, and a lip reader said he criticised Unai Emery. Do you think that's it for Ozil at Arsenal? Because as far as I'm concerned, he's worth more to them off the pitch in terms of his brand, in terms of his social media presence. Is it come to the point now where Arsenal have to cut their losses and say, right, we need to get rid of this guy because obviously he's more trouble than what he's worth?
Well, that depends, doesn't it? Who's in charge? Is Emery in charge or are the people upstairs in charge? Because Emery wants to get rid of him, but the people say, no, he makes us money. So you're in a decision there. If the manager's in charge, then you've got to get rid of him. You've got to get him off the payroll because he's just, like I say, he's not what you want in a team. He's like, even though Pogba's a better player, I think, he's a bit like Pogba. He's a player that you put an icing on the cake player that you bring into the team that you can put that icing on the cake. But when you're struggling, they're just not players you want in your team because they're just not interested.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. And Jan, speaking of being disinterested, it was another game where Lacazette and Aubameyang didn't turn up. I know both have got the score sheets this season. Aubameyang got one of the joint leading goal scorer in the Premier League. But again, it was another big game where he didn't turn up. Now, what about their future for Arsenal? Because same sort of situation with Ozil, big money, big social media presence, loved by many fans. But at the same time, again, he didn't turn up when they needed him to.
I'm going to disagree with that in a sense of they didn't turn up, but not because of them. I just feel, listen, when you play Ozil in a number 10 role and you play two defensive midfielders, Ozil's job is to create for the front two. If he's not going to create, where are the chances? Where's the supply going to come from the two front men? You know, so for me, the lack of creativity in the Arsenal team is the reason why they didn't get a sniff against Chelsea because the supply wasn't there. Now, I personally rate Lacazette very, very highly. I think he's a wonderful player, he's a fantastic striker. Aubameyang, for me, he's just a goal scorer. He doesn't offer a lot for the team. If he doesn't score, he doesn't really contribute a lot, in my opinion. Listen, for Arsenal to kind of improve, you know, they need about 5-6 players also to kind of improve. They've got to keep them because if they lose them two as well, you know, they're in massive trouble. And, you know, like Rod said, I don't know who's in a bigger mess, Arsenal or United, really. It's just, you know, both clubs have kind of fallen massively behind. And, you know, especially with both clubs being in the Europa League as well, the attraction of getting the better players, who's going to want to play in the Europa League? Everyone wants to play in the Champions League. So that's another problem that they're going to have attracting the better players.
Mm. That's a fair point. But Kojo, when you look at Chelsea's situation at the moment, they've got the transfer embargo. It looks like Sarri is on his way out. They've got an ageing squad. Hazard is probably on his way as well. They've got Pedro, who obviously is a big game player, in my opinion, and he turned up. But what do you think is in store for Chelsea next season? Because if Hazard goes, who is going to be that talisman? Who's going to be the guy to turn them around? I don't know what's happening for Chelsea next season. But on the flip side, it seems to be one of these clubs where when they're in turmoil, that's when they're at their best. It's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah, they seem like one of the most dysfunctional yet successful clubs. It's actually a weird way to look at them. But
they're like the Simpsons then.
They tend to get the business done at the end of the day, and that's what matters. With Hazard going, I think they have an issue where a lot of clubs have the same issue now, where you have a key man and all your focus is on just trying to play for him. And that can be a detriment to everybody else because you are either restricting everybody else's talent to supplement this one person, or you just don't know how to play without him when he's not there. Now, this is a learning curve. So they signed Pulisic, who's going to walk into the team, I'm assuming anyway. So I don't see it as a negative per se, because, you know, if you learn to play better without your talisman, you should be doing better overall. I mean, we've spoken about Spurs for a while now. Spurs are being told that they're better without Kane. And what it is that when they're missing Kane, they've learned how to play as a team without him, so they don't struggle. Chelsea don't have to do that. That's why they've had such a, I don't want to even say a poor season anymore because finished third and won the cup, so it wouldn't even make sense to say that. But I think they'll be okay. I think Hazard leaving could be a good thing. it actually could be a good thing for the players that are there at the moment.
Okay. So, D, what about Arsenal then? Because, you know, there's been a lot of Arsenal slander, and I know it's easy to pick holes in them, especially the way that their fans are on social media, but their situation, is it as bad as what people are making it out to be, or do they really need some serious reinforcements in the summer?
It's bad. So, sorry for my question, sorry.
It's all right.
Yeah, it's bad. Some of the replies might be... There might be a bit of hyperbole in some of the replies I was watching after the final, as usual. Had the popcorn and the drinks out to watch Arsenal fan TV. And DT was talking on there about how we're in danger of when Newcastle, the Sheikh takes over Newcastle, they'll go for us and all this talk. And he was arguing and swearing at another fan that was there. But they are in a bit of trouble, but there's goals if they can keep their front two, because I know teams that they keep on linking Aubameyang with Real Madrid. I don't know how strong those rumours are. Atleti are getting linked with Lacazette again, etc. So we'll see. If they can keep their front two there, and one or two additions in the midfield, it's probably better to shift Ozil because him and Emery aren't getting on. But it's the back line mainly that needs to be sorted. When they can actually make adequate signings, and I know Coach Kojo has spoken this before, that adequate signings at the back, then they can emerge. But until they do that, regardless of who they have up top, they're still, it's just going to be fifth or sixth in the league, really. So their best bet is to try and bag a domestic cup. But I can't really see them... I can't really see them shaking up Europe at the moment, and the league looks a long way off till they get that defence sorted out, and especially till they start getting more points away from home. Their away record in the last couple of seasons is horrible, man. It's horrible. So there is it's a crazy one. There is a lot to worry about, but at the same time, if they get in there, they proper get the scouts out there and make some adequate purchases, they can improve.
And Rod, on a final note, when it comes to Arsenal, Dee mentioned Arsenal fan TV and social media especially. Do you think what is said on social media makes much of a difference to these players? Because we've heard Hector Bellerin in the past come out and criticise Arsenal fan TV for making money on the back of Arsenal's, downfall. Granit Xhaka came out the other day straight after the game and said, we don't really care what the fans say. Is he telling porkies? Do you think that what happens on social media does affect the players?
Well, it shouldn't, because the professionals, but it could do if they watch that kind of nonsense, because, you know, let's have it right. We have them as well. We have just absolute idiots on these podcasts and these who are interviewing people after games. It's like interviewing managers after games when they've just been beat. They're not going to be happy. They're going to be venting and they're going to be talking crap. And, you know, when they see it the next day, they probably kind of cringe a little bit or maybe not. Because some of them just go over the top, really. But you know, it's United fans have got to be. Yes, there's been a lot of managers coming and going and bad decisions on players, and now it seems like it's a bad decision when they really, if in hindsight now, they should have waited for the end of the 6 months and they would have said to Ollie, okay, thanks, Ollie, blah blah blah, Pochettino in. And then, but now we've got Ollie, so we've got to stick by him. We've got to back him. Or it just becomes a laughing stock if you get rid of him within the end of the season, because he's trying to rebuild. He's trying to bring the right players in, which I'm sure he'll know what a United player is because he was there for so long. And just hopefully he can get the players out that he wants to get out, and just trying to kind of rebuild and try and shut that gap. You know, it's going to take time. It could take 5 years. Will he get that time? Probably not. But it depends how we progress in that time. You know, if we keep on progressing season after season, yeah, we'll put up with it as long as we're like winning the cup here and there. But you know, if it's the same old dribble, sixth or fifth, then these owners, they're trigger happy. They'll get rid again, and you know, you just become a laughing stock really. So, and Arsenal are not so much in a pickle. You know, Emery started, it's his first season, he started well and it's gone a bit pear-shaped, but he still needs to get players out and bring players in, so it's difficult. And then when you've got City and Liverpool, who are so strong, they're going to strengthen, And then you've got Tottenham as well. Where are they going? And then you've got Chelsea. So, you know, it's going to be difficult, and it's going to be a long road. But going back to your question, it shouldn't do. But you know, these professionals now, they seem weak minded, and they're always on Twitter, they're always on Instagram. They've got a profile, so I'm sure they see it. If it affects them, then they shouldn't be in the game.
Fair point. Right, let's move on to the Champions League final, shall we? It's not the what they call it, curtain raiser is the charity shield, isn't it? It's the opening game of the season, the one that introduces the season. It's the curtain call. I think it's the curtain call. The end of the season, officially the end of the season. But you know, if you want to look at the calendar, see the Women's World Cup and other pointless tournaments like that, then I guess the football season isn't really over. Sorry, guys. But yeah, Liverpool are now 6 times European champions. They can brag about being European champions with 2 hands now, I guess. Thanks to my friend Anthony Kashinakis, has been messaging me all day with two hands, dos mano, that kind of stuff, whatever. Yeah, so they beat Spurs 2-0. We were talking about the game, or the preview of the game on your show, and we were saying that it could be a cagey affair, and I thought the first 15 seconds were quite cagey, but then after that, it kind of went downhill for Spurs. I mean, when you look at the balance of play after the game, Spurs didn't seem to really have an answer to Liverpool going ahead. Was it a case of because Liverpool went ahead so early in the game, or was it a fact that Spurs were just so shell-shocked that they didn't have anything else to offer?
The early goal obviously was a major factor. Like, Liverpool came flying out the blocks from the kickoff, and Spurs didn't really know what hit them. Stoker was unlucky with that ball. I see why it was given, but at the same time, it did hit his chest first, so on another day, you never know, it might not have been given. But that seemed to hit them. But then what Liverpool did well at first is that they were struggling to keep the ball in the midfield. So they just repeatedly continued to just go direct. And it was causing Spurs having to reshuffle at the back with the balls over the top. And that's not necessarily Liverpool style, but I took it. It was as a spectacle. It wasn't very exciting to watch by any means. And in terms of Liverpool, Tottenham and the two league games they've had, it seemed a bit of an anti-climax, but Liverpool adjusted, and it's all about game management, really. A couple of seasons ago, we wouldn't have been able to win that final because we never would really win games when we didn't play well, but we learned how to get through. We found a way. My cousin, I was talking to him on Saturday night, and he called it a Mayweather performance because of how well drilled they were from a defensive aspect. Alisson had quite a few saves to make, but it wasn't any one-on-ones or any shots where you thought that a Tottenham player would definitely score. It was lots of long-range efforts. Like, I think Trippier might have had a long-range one. He saved from Son. He saved a free kick from Eriksen. They were all shots from just outside the box or on the edge of the box and all at savable heights at the end of the day. And that's what Tottenham were restricted to. So I just think Liverpool were well-organised for a lot of the game. And then, obviously, Origi, who is a god and better than Lionel Messi, got the second goal and ended it. And it was just relief, really, because I was just thinking, Tottenham are going to get a late one here, some late deflected goal or something like that. It was going to go to extra time. But we managed to get through and was very, very proud of the lads and some real emotional scenes at the end with some of the players going to their family and whatnot. But it was nice. We kept Tottenham at bay. Moura should have started. Kane clearly not fully fit, wasn't really effective, and I think Moura, that pace outlet and the driving runs that he makes, could have caused Liverpool much more problems because Kane was just kind of labouring around and wasn't effective. Don't get it twisted, if he's fully fit he should start for Tottenham all the time, but if he's not, it might be better to start Moura, and then if it's not working, see he's not playing well, then get him on the pitch after 60, 70 minutes, and I think he would have been more effective that way.
Jan, this wasn't the heavy metal football that we kind of expect to see from Liverpool. Do you think that was their game plan, to kind of sit back and soak it up and hit Spurs on the counter, because they do have the pace and obviously the power up front?
No, I don't think so. Still, I just think the early goal was a key factor. I just think, you know, the fact that Liverpool got it so early, Tottenham was shell-shocked. And then, Liverpool seemed to kind of, you know, manage the game after that. But then, granted, Tottenham didn't really offer anything for, you know, for Liverpool to be worried about, really. I mean, you know, like Dee said, that, you know, the saves Alisson made, you know, were kind of routine saves. You know, are saves that you expect your goalkeeper to make. I was bitterly disappointed in Tottenham, to be honest with you. I've given them a lot of credit, as you know, on the show, and I think they've deserved it for the fact that they, you know, they haven't spent, you know, any money on players and what Pochettino has done, you know, but they would leave with so many regrets, in my opinion. To get to a Champions League final was phenomenal, but to actually go there and not produce and not turn up, you know, for me, that was very disappointing. Pochettino got it wrong, you know, I agree again. I know managers get paid top dollar to make big decisions, but I'd just love to know how Pochettino broke it to Lucas Moura. I really would. You know, sorry, son, I know Kane's been injured all this time. You've done sensational. You got us to the final, but you're on the bench. You know, play him. Kane's clearly not fit, or if he's fit, he's not match fit. There's a difference between being fit and being match fit, and it's a massive difference, and we all saw that on Saturday. Kane was laboured, you know, he wanted everything to fit. He wouldn't go over the top because he didn't have the pace or the fitness to stretch Liverpool. And Liverpool managed the game defensively really well because everything was in front of them. So if Moura would have played, he would have stretched the defence because Moura would have given them a different direction to go over the top, and with his pace would have caused problems. So in that aspect, he got it wrong. I thought Tottenham tactically got it wrong. Too many square passes, lethargic. Like I said, you know, the game wasn't good as a spectacle. We all know that. But Liverpool don't care because they won the game. So sometimes finals go like that, unfortunately.
Mm. Well, Rod, do you think this was naivety from Pochettino then? Because as Jan said, Harry Kane wasn't 100% fit. He wasn't match fit. And on top of that, if you look at the way that Spurs were attacking, they were mostly going down Liverpool's right-hand side. They were using Son to get at Alexander-Arnold. And we know that in terms of an attacking threat, he's fantastic. He's got rapid pace. But perhaps they thought defensively he wasn't as sound as perhaps Robertson, so they weren't attacking Robertson down that side. So I can see why Son was being instructed to go at Alexander-Arnold. But at the same time, you know, that early goal completely deflated Spurs. And going back to Pochettino, was he naive in terms of selecting Harry Kane? Was he naive in terms of his midfield selection? Because I thought he maybe would have gone with two holding midfielders.
Well, first of all, when they were talking about, I was thinking to myself, well, Harry Kane, what is he in the top world of players, and is he in a top 10?
In terms of strikers, definitely.
Well, in a player of the world, in the effective as a team player, how is he in a top 10?
I don't know.
A team player, I wouldn't say so.
No, as a centre forward, as a goal scorer, he's a top three
in
the world.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, if Ronaldo or Messi or Neymar or Mbappe have been out for that long and they're fit, would they play?
Well, we saw it with R9 in the World Cup final. He had a fit the day of the game, didn't he?
So. We'll try and get to it. I agreed with him when he made the thinking. Yeah, well, I would play him. But thinking about it and assessing it, you know, it never ever works. It, when they've come back from injury, you can name it umpteen times. Wayne Rooney when he did it, when David Beckham when he did it, they just never. It's not that. There's a difference with training every day and being fit than match fit. That Jan says it's total different. And to that massive and big of a game. Yeah, he shouldn't have played him. He should have put Moura, especially what Moura did in the hat-trick. And like Jan said, the pace that Moura's got, I just don't think Harry Kane, and you know, let's face it, he's against the best centre-back in the world. And Van Dijk had his Cuban out all day with him because he just couldn't get a kick. What did he have, 11 touches in the whole game?
Yeah.
Yeah, so in hindsight, at first I agreed with him. I think, yeah, I'd play him. But then in hindsight, thinking about it, it just never works. They just never match fit. Unless you're Lionel Messi or Ronaldo, I would put them on the bench.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gents, would you blame Harry Kane as well for his part? In a sense of, you know, he's going to be selfish, of course. It's a Champions League final. He might never get there with Tottenham. Naturally, he's going to want to play. But surely he knows himself that he's only making...
Well, he's obviously trained. He's trained hard. They've assessed it because they've got all these kind of assessments that they can do on him. And they've obviously come through it flying colours. And Harry Kane's pretty level-headed guy. So if the manager put him on the bench, I'm sure he would have, you know, supported the team and done his job when called upon, but you know, it was a manager's decision at the end of the day, and he's gone with Barry Kane, which, like I say, in hindsight, was probably the wrong decision.
My issue wasn't Harry Kane playing, though. My issue was Harry Kane not coming off. You know, you could tell he was not in the game at all. He looked tired because when you lack match fitness, you need minutes under your belt, and he missed a lot of playing time. It wasn't like 2 or 3 weeks. He missed a lot. But
that's the manager's pride not to take him off. Because if he takes him off, he's showing the whole world that he's made the
mistake. If you're going to be a manager, Jan, at that top level, you've got to be cutthroat. You can't be sentimental. You've got to assess it, see it. He wasn't affecting the game.
Exactly. That's why he shouldn't have started.
Affecting the game more, and he took Dele Alli off and left Harry Kane on.
And also, taking off Harry Winks. I mean...
Yeah.
Both teams could sort of cancel each other out because the front three for Liverpool need a lot of space to do their thing, and Spurs tried to make sure they didn't have space. At the same time, Spurs were stifled by Liverpool. Sorry, Liverpool tried to pretty much control them without the ball, let them have possession like Tottenham like to. But Harry Winks was running the midfield.
He was another one that was out injured for a while.
If he's playing well and Harry Kane isn't, you have to make that decision to take Harry Kane off.
Yeah,
because you've taken off your effective player. And he brought on Eric Dier, which, I mean, I've said it many times in this podcast, and I've been to many podcasts, I've said it there as well. Eric Dier is trash. I'm going to say as it is. He's absolute garbage.
Dier's Dier, isn't he?
Yeah. You know, his career's going to go down for shushing people, and that's pathetic. He's not an impact player. He's not what you need. If you want to bring on another midfielder from the bench, you bring on Wanyama if you really want to make that change.
Mm.
But he brought on Dier, another one that came back from injury. And I don't understand it. I'm a big Pochettino fan, but all his substitutions made no sense whatsoever. And he cost the game.
Mm. I think everything was against Tottenham, Liverpool. They've just been to the Champions League finals. They've got that experience. They've been there many, many times as a club. Tottenham was the first major European Cup final. I just think, they just choked, and obviously the pressure got to them because the decisions we're making were just wrong. Yeah. In every level.
And I also think that perhaps we're not giving Liverpool enough credit here, because the three central midfielders with Wijnaldum, Fabinho and Henderson, they're terriers. Not only do they, you know, harry and harass players to win the ball, they've got energy, you know, they cover every blade of grass. And Dan, again, it was another superb performance from Liverpool's midfield three. Henderson obviously stood out because he's the captain. He's taken a lot of stick. And I spoke to John Otsumabor about Henderson's impact at Liverpool earlier on in the day, which obviously I'll play later. But I think the one player that impressed me the most yesterday from Liverpool's perspective was Fabinho. Because, again, he was very quiet throughout the game. But he was doing the basics right. He was tracking back. He kept Eriksen quiet. And on top of that, he was getting forward as kind of like a number 10, which is something that we haven't seen from him this season.
Yeah, I love Fabinho, man. No homo. When we bought him, I was so gassed because I was convinced that he was going to Man United because all of their fans were making fan videos and all that and saying, welcome.
Oh, pay no
to
notice
Old
to those.
Trafford.
Pay no
you're
notice to those.
You're overdoing it, bro. You're overdoing it. Let's continue.
Pay no notice to those United fans that make YouTube videos. They don't know anything.
It's hard for you right now, Mike. You get me? No, but I was gassed because I liked what I'd seen of him at Monaco. Just keeps the game simple. Obviously, he used to be a right back, intercepts, plays it short, can dribble with it, can shoot and whatnot. As you said, he was.
making his birthday. And they got man of the match, but I thought should have gone to him. Maybe Alisson for the central Robertson, because Robertson was his usual self, up and down the left, getting right stuck on Trippier. But yeah, Fabinho was very, very, very good. As you said, he did his work quietly because there was no one from Tottenham skinning or taking someone on, and he was just getting back, making up the numbers and just getting into there to just cause traffic in and around the box. And then as Jan said before, Tottenham would just play in the square rather than trying to go at Liverpool. That allowed Liverpool to get more people back and then crowd them out in the end and restrict them to the long-range efforts. But yeah, he's been really good. I just like the way the midfield, at first I was sceptical, but then I've seen that we've not had to, because we're not conceding as many goals, we've not had to blitz teams out as we've had to for most of the Klopp era. So being able to manage games, I'm just excited to see, like, with a fit of say Chamberlain next season, what he can do when he knows that the midfield is covered and he can just drive forward and go and score goals and assists like he was doing before he got injured. But no, the winning ugly, I know there was a previous, I think it was when United played Watford and Rod and Jan were going back and forth because Jan was cussing the performance, but Rod was like, yeah, but we got the 3 points, that doesn't matter. And that was like when it was on Saturday. Liverpool have not won a final without extra time since 2003. So it was nice to not have the stress of a penalty shootout or extra time or anything like that for us. Just get it done in 90 minutes. So now we've done that, I didn't care about the entertainment value or neutral people telling me the final was poor. The main thing was just to win it, and we've done it, so I can relax now.
Mm. Well, Kojo, you know me, I'm one of these people that loves to say I told you so, but on this occasion I don't like it, because I remember going on the Footy Says show with you some time ago, and I said, you know, Jurgen Klopp has learnt from his mistakes from last season. You know, he's not playing with this high intensity as he used to. He's made some signings to bolster the squad, like your Shaqiris that can come in and do a job. And they've reaped the benefits this season, haven't they? They've been absolutely immense. Even though they didn't win the league, no one can say that they haven't been one of, if not the best teams in Europe. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. They're European champions.
Yeah. It's funny you said that. Flipping, what's his name? Van Gaal had an interview.
Oh, with Jamie Jackson, yeah.
Which was interesting. But not on Liverpool, what he said was Klopp has identified this thing of exploiting space. So rather than high pressing all the time now, he's a lot more patient, and then he uses his fast players to exploit space. And that's what he was trying to do with Rashford and Martial. And it's a smart way of doing it, because if you've got the speed up front and you've got someone who has a bit of a technical touch like Firmino, you know, and especially because he hasn't got strong creative players in the centre of midfield, he uses those three very, very well. And he uses the fullbacks very, very well as well. Because when all the focus on the front three, those fullbacks have so much space to bomb down. And they drag teams to one side and take them to the other. And what you said about adding the players bolstering the squad, Shaqiri, Fabinho, Van Dijk obviously came in January last year, all that stuff, it just helps the team get even better. And they've built the team perfectly for them, you know, it's for the way he wants to play and the way he can change the styles. The one thing I hate about lots of managers and coaches, they don't have a plan B. He has a plan B. If he needs to go heavy metal, he goes heavy metal. If he needs to go a bit classical, he goes classical, you know? So it's good. It's good to watch.
There you go.
Begrudgingly. But you lost. But Liverpool.
That's a nice way of ending that bit.
Take your Spurs shirt off, mate.
Spurs? I'm not a Spurs fan. Like,
take it off. Yeah, I know. You had it on Saturday, though, didn't you?
No, I actually didn't wear it. No, I like that.
Oh, you didn't wear it yet? Oh, okay.
No, I didn't wear that. No, I can't do
that. Now. Well, the match was slightly overshadowed by the death of Jose Antonio Reyes, who died in a car crash, aged 35. I think a relative was also killed in the accident. Now, for those of you who don't remember, he started at Sevilla, I believe, as a youth player. And then he joined Arsenal in 2004 as part of the Invincible side. It was a fantastic squad there. And they ended up at Real Madrid, won La Liga, and then joined Atletico full-time before going back to Sevilla in 2016. Gents, it was obviously a shock, a massive shock. Rod, what do you remember of Reyes? I mean, I remember that goal against Chelsea, which a lot of people have spoken about, but he was one of those players that unfortunately didn't really set the Premier League on fire.
No, I think it was around them times it was physical, and I don't think he enjoyed the physicality. And, you know, I remember United targeting one time at Old Trafford really, really bad. And, you know, I was actually watching it a couple of weeks ago. It was on, funny enough. I was watching it for 10 minutes and they actually kicked him to pieces at Old Trafford, the Neville brothers, and I can't remember who else. So it was a good play. You know mug if you play for Arsenal, Real Madrid, Seville. It's just it's just shocking when you read about it. You know, if it was that the reports are correct, you know, driving at 147 miles an hour. You know, you're asking for trouble, but as a player, yeah, he was a good player. He wasn't a great player, but you know, he was a good player. He was a dangerous player, and he was sometimes a joy to watch. But it's just tragic. 35 years of age. It's, you know, and the other people, was his brother that was with him, or someone else was with him, a teammate. Yeah, it's just tragic. Really bad news.
Mm. Yeah, and what do you remember of Reyes?
It came as this kind of next big thing in Spain, wasn't he, when he came over? For me, he didn't fulfil his potential. I think there was a lot more to give, you know, at the clubs that he went to, and I don't think he hit the height. I think it was a bit like Joaquin, where there was a lot more kind of promise, and it didn't materialise. But listen, like Rod said, if you're going to play for Arsenal at the time that he did, he was part of the invincible side. He had a cracking left foot. He had a lot of ability. He had skill on him, and he seemed like a, you know, level-headed lad. So, you know, the news, you know, coming out again was tragic, and just, you know, our thoughts are with his family, of course.
And Dee?
Yeah, I was I liked Reyes. May he rest in peace. I liked him as a player. As Rod said, though, he's one of those players that were technically gifted, but that's the thing with the Premier League. If you prove yourself in the Premier League, you can generally just prove yourself anywhere, because obviously with competitive nature and how rough people can be, it's almost like it's not football at a stage the way that some players play the game. But he had a great left foot. Had some highlights against Arsenal. I remember him scoring at Highbury when they beat, I think it was it Middlesbrough? They beat 5-3 or something like that.
That's right, yeah.
A crazy game. I remember Frank Kudrow scoring for Middlesbrough and that as well. In that, as Stel said to Chelsea goal earlier, he went on loan to Real Madrid, didn't he? And I remember him getting 2 goals in the last day of the, was it the 2006-07 season, for them to win the league on the last day when it was a 3-horse race between Madrid, Barca and Sevilla.
It was under Capello, yeah, wasn't it, at the time?
So yeah, under Capello, yeah. Yeah, Capello left after that, didn't he?
Mm.
He was a good player. But as you have said, he didn't quite hit his ceiling. But he was easy on the eye and had, as most left-footed players are. But yeah, that was really sad. And we found out just as we wrapped up the radio show with Stel and Coach on Saturday, and it was a bit surreal. It proper knocked me off, like, because we just saw it pop up like straight away. But nice, sad, man. May he rest in peace. Gone way, way, way, way too early.
Yeah, it was his cousin, who's 23 years old, that perished in the crash. But I think what was a bit disturbing was Canizares, the former Valencia goalkeeper. He put out a tweet saying, "Driving at high speed shows reprehensible attitude. In the accident, there have been victims in addition to the driver. Reyes does not deserve a tribute like a hero, but that does not mean that I regret what happened and I pray for their souls." Why on earth is he coming out saying something like that, especially straight after the news? I mean, this he tweeted it, what, second, which was yesterday. So it was like the day after. Why would you do that? I don't know.
Is he trying to maybe encourage everybody that if you drive at high speeds, these are the implications? Maybe he's trying to make I know the timing is wrong, of course, and maybe how he's worded it is wrong, but maybe he's trying to send the message that if you're going to drive at, you know, them kind of speeds, these are kind of the consequences, or...
Well, that's because he put out a tweet afterwards, you know, saying, you know, I just pretend to condemn the insensibility and ask people to think about the mistakes we make, which, yeah, I understand, but at the same time, why are you tweeting? I can't understand. The guy's just died. Just say, you know, rest in peace, and then maybe a few weeks later, say something along the lines of, you know, driving at high speeds, one, or in fact, even be part of a campaign that they have on TV to talk about the dangers of speeding. But to put out a tweet, I know heat at the moment, whatever, but you're a professional, regardless of whether, you know, you've retired or not, you're still a name, you're still recognisable, people know who you are. So I think that's very, very insensitive for him to do that. But yeah, you're right, D. You know, may the lad rest in peace. I mean, I remember hearing stories about him shopping in Asda in Southgate, you know, because that was his local supermarket, and a lot of Arsenal fans loved him and still do. So it really is a shame for something like this to happen. So yeah. Well, let's move on to another story, which again is another... It's another disturbing story. A lady has accused Neymar of raping her. The woman, who obviously hasn't been named, said that she got to know him through Instagram, and he suggested that they met in Paris, and then he provided her with a ticket from Brazil to France, and, you know, reserved a luxury hotel in Paris, and apparently he was drunk, and he became aggressive, and yada yada. Obviously Neymar has denied it. He said that, you know, these are unjust accusations, and he's a victim of an attempted extortion. Gents, we've seen or heard stories like this time and time again with footballers being accused of rape. I mean, even Cristiano Ronaldo is going through a case at the moment where he's actually not even going to America in case he gets arrested. What do you make of this situation? We obviously don't know the facts. It's one person's views against the others, but at the end of the day, these footballers are role models, and surely they should be more careful when it comes to things like this. I mean, meeting someone off Instagram is a bit creepy, to say the least, is it not, Jan?
Yeah, it is, especially if you don't know who the person is, and, you know, you don't know what their agenda are as well. I mean, you know, maybe she's after a story, maybe she's after money, maybe she's telling the truth. I mean, you know, footballers, especially, we know, you know, they've got money, they've got power, and, you know, sometimes they can do what they want, and, you know, because money talks, you know, the truth doesn't always come out. But, you know, the thing with Neymar, you know, I might divert a little bit, but everything surrounding Neymar in the last maybe 6 or 9 months has all been negative, really. Ever since he's kind of gone to PSG, you know, the money side, you know, he slapped or punched the fan after the cup final? You know, all these shenanigans after the, you know, the United game, and he got banned from that as well. So everything around Neymar at the moment, you know, is kind of negative. So you don't know if his personal life is kind of affecting his mood or his attitude. And then this is another story that's come out that's reflected on that. You know, you don't know. I mean, you know, we only see footballers, obviously, through the telly going to the stadium, but we actually don't know what happens in their private lives. Mm. So, who do you believe still? You know, look at the Ched Evans situation, you know. Giza went down and then, you know, he was innocent. So, you know, what do you believe? Do you believe her? Is she telling the truth? Did he actually do it? We don't know, and, you know, sometimes you won't get the true fibre. Mm.
Rod, Jan makes a good point here, because you're talking about the world's most expensive footballer. He was banned for 3 matches after hitting a fan. He had that long injury layoff, or he had a poor World Cup. Is this guy more of a target these days, and should he really know better? Is he advised by the wrong people? Rod?
I made a good point, so I think Rod's fainted.
sorry, mate, I had it on mute. No, that's he doesn't work for anyone. You know, they work for him. So, you know, he does what he wants, basically. He earns a lot of money. He should know better, but, you know, things like this, I just let the courts deal with it, and I'll let the police deal with it, and see when it all wraps up, because, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's just... what's the word, what's the phrase, wolf crying sheep crying wolf. So yeah, so you know, the recent one with JLS, you know, he's been through murders and he was innocent. So like Jan touched upon, the Ched Evans, so like I say, 9 times out of 10 it's just woman just being stupid and you know, and ruin it for people who actually do get raped. So it's just, we'll just let the court, I don't really like to comment on stuff like this, so just let the courts deal with it and see how it plays out.
Well, Dan, Neymar said on Brazilian TV that it's clear that it was a trap. Now, going back to the question I asked Rod, do you think because of who he is, because of everything that surrounded him, as I said, the world transfer fee, playing for Paris Saint-Germain, you know, the massive deal with the Qatari bank, does that make him a target for people? Dan's gone silent now. Excellent.
Sorry about that one. Yeah, it definitely makes him a target. Because obviously, as you said, with all these things of social media presence and whatnot, it's going to give the person, what do they say, bad press is good press or whatever it is, or it's going to get you out there and involved with things. But he's definitely a target because, most, as you said, most expensive player, regardless of all the antics, the dropping on the floor, etc., he is one of the best players in the world, outside of the other nonsense that comes with it, and it definitely makes him a target. As you said, as Rod said, a lot of these cases, they end up not having done the thing. I don't know, and I'm not in a position to judge, and I don't know what's happened, so I'm not going to comment too much on that side of things. But it will be interesting to see what actually does happen and come from this. I hope he didn't do it, but my hope has nothing to do with what has actually taken place, because that is in the past now. But he's definitely a huge, huge target. And after what happened with Cristiano's one coming out, and what the original incident was, what, 8 or 9 years ago with the Cristiano one?
Yeah.
More of these stories are going to come out, and some are going to be true and some aren't, but that's just the way how it is now, unfortunately. They've always been about rape type of cases, but now, if anything, they're just, some women will probably have not chosen to say anything at the time, but now more than anything, more and more of these things are going to come out, and more players, unfortunately, are going to be targets.
Robinho was another one, wasn't he?
Yeah. Didn't he do some time? Robinho, I swear he did a bit. Yeah, he was sentenced for a little bit, and then obviously he's come out and he's playing in Turkey now.
He's playing in Turkey, that's right. Yeah.
Same team as Adebayor.
Let's have it right with Neymar. You know, like Dan touched on there. You know, what's he? He's one of the world top players, and he's meeting some wannabe from Instagram.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Naive, so naive.
And the thing is, it's so close to the Copa America as well. And as Jan said, the past 6 to 9 months, everything surrounding him has been so negative. And we've seen this lad blossom from Santos. He ended up at Barcelona, won the treble. And then he moved to Paris Saint-Germain. And people were saying, well, he's a mercenary. You know, all he cares about is money and whatnot. And let's be honest, if you're being offered 300-500 grand a week to go play for play in a farmers league, as they call it, of course you're going to go. Of course you're going to go. But it just seems that he's another one of these footballers where he's been elevated so high that people want to knock him down, and they'll use any possible trick they can to do that. He's a fantastic footballer. Yes, his antics are stupid. You know, they're rolling around like a little bitch. You know, no one really likes seeing that, but he's a very talented footballer. And I just fear that, 26 years old, his career's going to come to a really abrupt end as a result of things like this.
We've seen it before, though, haven't we, Steve? If they don't concentrate, is what they're really good at, then they end up going out of the game early and not being showing the potential that they could be, and could be one of the greatest players in the world. You can see he's like a spoilt little kid. You know, he's had everything as a kid. He's got lots of money. He's in a, like you say, a farmers league, and he can just do what he wants, and that's what he's doing. And no one can tell him otherwise, because, you know, he's a star player and whatever. But, you know, this other situation is different. But like I say, 9 times out of 10, it just becomes, it's rubbish.
Absolutely. Well, let's move swiftly on quickly to Aston Villa. They just got promoted and they've released 9 players, one of them being Ross McCormack and another one being Mika Richards. I think Villa have cut about 400 grand a week from their wage bill since getting rid of them both. Ross McCormack, Jan, he hasn't been a hit at all, has he?
12 million flop since 2016. When they signed him, he fell out with Steve Bruce, went to Australia, went to Fulham.
Yeah, but he fell out with Steve Bruce because he didn't turn up for training and he blamed his gait, didn't he?
That's right, yeah. And Bruce wasn't having any in it. You know, so he's another one that, you know, had a little bit of talent and, you know, seems to have wasted. He's another one that's kind of not fulfilled, you know, that little bit of talent that he had as a footballer as well. And it just seems, again, you know, £12 million move. He probably, you know, Ross McCormack was probably on money he's never been on before. And like we, you know, we said about Neymar and other footballers, money seems to go to people's heads. And they're more worried about their bank accounts than actually concentrating on playing football. And then before you know it, you know, a footballer's career is quite short. And then you end up, you know, talking about players like, you know, Andriano and all these players that haven't fulfilled their potential because of things happening off the pitch instead of on the pitch.
Mm. And on to Leeds United, who obviously had a little bit of a spat with Aston Villa earlier on this month, or last month, should I say. Dan, apparently Leeds are in takeover talks with Paris Saint-Germain's owner, Nasser Al-Khelaifi, possibly wanting to take over the club. What do you think that will mean for Leeds United?
I'm not sure. This is going to sound weird, because obviously you'll think, oh, money, so they can go out and get who they want. As it's been confirmed that Bielsa's going to stay, I'm not necessarily sure. I would think the money could possibly upset the apple cart, if that made any sense, because Bielsa's blooded the youth there. He's got a lot of players playing in multiple positions and that as well. And if they get money, unless it's done like very wisely in regards to how he's doing things, it could mess things up. If the right players are bought if they don't settle to life in England or whatever, because you'd think that they'd go looking abroad if they were to get a bit of money. So I think how they are is fine at the moment. I just think they need to make a couple of useful additions so they can be also can attract names like they got in that Spanish keeper to come and take over from Peacock Farrell, the young who's Northern Ireland's number one now. So I don't think too much has to be done with Leeds, and I think that they'll be thereabouts again to come up. So it sounds weird to say it, but I'm not sure new owners, I'm not sure it will all go 100% smoothly, to be honest.
And last week we heard about a possible takeover for Newcastle United. You had Bin Zayed from Dubai allegedly making an offer and it's been accepted. I'm not sure about this one, because I spoke to you after your show the other day, Dee, and I'm going to put this to Jan and Rod. Now, you guys, I don't know if you guys are aware, but Expo 2020 is happening in Dubai next year. They're pumping about $33 billion into the state to create new jobs, new businesses and whatnot, to improve the GDP and obviously boost their economy. Now, their future hinges on this event. Now, if it goes tits up, who do you think is going to bail them out? Abu Dhabi. They've done it before. They've bailed out Dubai in the past. And who is the royal family of Abu Dhabi? The owners of Manchester City. So do you think there's like a conflict of interest here, guys?
I don't know. What are you allowed to have kind of two kind of owners of a club that are kind of family related in the same league?
See, I don't know this. I don't know, because it's not the same person.
Yeah, I know, but apparently they're cousins or something.
Well, they are related, yeah.
Well, if they're related, what happens if Newcastle are going for a title and they're playing City and he goes, well, you know, I'll just let you win today, because, I mean, they're not going to obviously do it, you know, publicly, but behind closed doors, relatives, you know, things like that. I thought things like that weren't allowed. So
I don't know. I just think the monetary situation is more of a concern, because if Newcastle are taken over by this guy and things don't go to plan in Dubai, then they're going
to
be in big trouble.
He might pull out his money out of Newcastle to go and save his own, and then Newcastle are buggered after that, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's a bit like Man City. Once the City money run out and they decide to to leave one day, what's going to happen to them?
Well, I don't think the City owners will decide to leave because they've put a lot of money into it, and they're using the club to boost their own profile. Don't forget, you know, they've got so many separate entities pumped into the club, that interest like Etihad, and obviously they've built a training ground. They've actually helped the local community, the university, and all that kind of stuff. So their owners are exploring far and wide. They've obviously got New York City, they've got Melbourne, they've got a club in Uruguay, I think. Pep Guardiola's brother's got some kind of... Isn't he the owner of... which club is it in Spain? It's not Granada, it's another one. I forget what it's called now. I think they got relegated. Who got relegated this season from La Liga?
I forget. To Almeria?
No. I forget.
Girona,
that's it. So he's got interest in that. So I think the Man City owners are approaching things differently, whereas with Newcastle... I don't know. I don't know whether the Bin Zayed is actually thinking of doing something similar to I don't know, boost the infrastructure of the area. I'm not totally sure. So I don't know about these Newcastle fans getting overly excited about it. I think because of the fact that Mike Ashley is willing to sell, that's probably why they're getting excited, Rod. Don't you think they're just fed up with this guy?
Say again, sorry.
I think they're just fed up of Mike Ashley. They'll take anyone at the moment.
Yeah, they will. But, you know, they've got City, they've got Anderlecht as well. There's like, they'll probably feed a couple of
Yeah, that's right.
Company going there.
That's right, yeah.
You know, when you're talking money, these guys have got, they're not talking millions, they've got billions, so. Will it be a conflict? I don't know. It'd be a good thing for Newcastle if it's kosher, but we'll have to wait and see because you know, it is a great club, it is. And they are good fans, but. Yeah, it'd be another one thrown into mix because they'll be throwing money about, and it's, you know, even though people, you'll have to spend big money because people don't seem to want to go up there for some reason. I know it's cold and that, but it's a great club to play for. But yeah, I forgot your question.
Well, anyone but Ashley in their eyes, I guess.
Yeah, like I say, how many times now in the last year or so has someone come in and bought him? So you're just going to have to wait and see how it plays out. But this one looks really kosher because these have got money. So if it is a good thing, the Newcastle will be praying because they just want Ashley out the door.
Mm, that's right. So with that trade deal with Qatar going down the toilet and the price of oil going down, I think that actual transfer of the club may not happen. But anyway, onwards and upwards, I guess. Right, let's finish the show with one story. I know over the years we've had managers in charge of clubs for 4 months, like De Boer. We had a manager in Greece in charge of the club for 4 days, and in Turkey they've done one better. İbrahim Ulumuz was sacked after just 4 hours of being announced as the manager of what was the club called? Kasımpaşa'yan. You know how to pronounce it better than I do.
Kasımpaşa.
Yeah. So he agreed to become the head coach at midday, and 4 hours later he was sacked. They really know what they're doing out there, don't they?
Hello, love. What are you doing home? They've released me off my duties.
We just signed a deal 4 hours ago. Yeah.
Yeah. It was not good for me. I'll get another job.
Well, yeah,
you can't even watch The Godfather or Casino. That
Well, he had a disagreement with the board, and they just terminated his contract. It was mutual consent, but they went through the rigmarole of doing the whole unveiling. They had a, you know, press conference, and everything. I don't know if they did a press conference for him being sacked as well, but.
The thing is, if they would have sacked him, that means they would have paid his contract off.
Yeah, true. True. So, but then again, does the ink have to dry before it's actually officially...
I'll tell you what, he did well for 4 hours' work.
Yeah, true.
Undefeated.
A better record than David Moyes, then. There you go, great stuff. Well, that's the end of our show, ladies and gents. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Yeah, lads, thanks for jumping on with me. It's been great talking to you guys again. I'm sure we'll be doing this sometime very soon. Twitter handles, Jan?
Yannick is J.
Rod?
Rod James Higgs.
Are you allowed to divulge why your advert has been binned?
Have they told you? glamorising betting.
Really?
Well, I was saying who it'd been, but I turned the TV on before, and it was actually home when I put the channel on. It was weird, but...
Wow.
Yeah, okay. Just edited it, but just banned it from YouTube, and yeah.
That's weird, because you see other betting companies with actors and whatnot in... I don't know.
I did see the advert tonight, though. It was on.
Yeah, no, I've seen it before, but it doesn't bother me. I've been paid up.
That's all that matters. Great stuff. D.
At double D, that's DUBULDEE, and my show at DD Footy Factory.
Are you recording another pod this week?
I'm not actually sure, because it's Nations League this Thursday, isn't it? I'm sure England are playing Holland this Thursday, so I don't actually think so. Okay. I think it'll be put till next week. I'll have to catch up with the lads to see what's going on.
Okay, great stuff. Well, you can listen to the Saturday show on SoundCloud, can't you?
Yep, that's Double D on SoundCloud as well. I need to send that over and try and get that up on Apple Podcasts. But yeah, still, we had Stella on Saturday, had a laugh. I've already got some feedback that the first hour of the show was anti-Arsenal, and some of the fans have said they are not going to listen to the show again.
Oh dear. Get the smallest violin out, eh?
Oh well.
They'll be tuning in next week, don't worry. Great stuff. Well, that's it from us this week. Give us a follow on Twitter @ShootDefence. And that's it. So until next time, adios.